Father in heaven, thank you so much for this beautiful day you've given us today. Father, thank you for letting us come together to study your word. Lord, I pray that we will really learn something today that will just make us love you more. Father, make us love other people more. Father, that would just change our own personal lives to where we're more like Jesus. Father, I thank you, Lord, that you've allowed those of us who've got to work on the Genesis class and to teach it. I thank you for this opportunity. Father, I pray that you really have been honored through this, Lord, and glorified. And Father, I pray, too, that this will really inspire us to read our Bibles more and more, to trust you more and more, and to just be more like your Son, Jesus, in every possible way. Please bless us now as we study. And Father, help just class go just go awesome and to glorify you. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen. So Psalms 105 is one of those chapters in the Bible that is it's kind of like a historical thing. It kind of gives you a Cliff Notes version of something that's happened. Acts 7 is that way. Psalms 105 is that way. I think the Prayer of Solomon, I believe, in 1 Kings 4 is that way. But anyway, let's start in verse 8. Psalms 105. He remembers his covenant forever, the word he commanded for 1,000 generations. The covenant he made with Abraham, the oath he swore to Isaac. He confirmed it to Jacob as a decree, to Israel as an everlasting covenant. To you I will give the land of Canaan as the portion you will inherit. When they were but few in number, few indeed, and strangers in it, they wandered from nation to nation, from one kingdom to another. And this is the Romans of Jacob. He allowed no one to oppress them. For their sake he rebuked kings. Do not touch my anointed ones. Do not do my prophets no harm. And that is exactly what he said to Abimelech. And that's what also he said to Laban, similar words. You know, don't touch Jacob, leave him alone. He called down famine on the land and destroyed all their supplies of food. And he sent a man before them, Joseph, sold as a slave. They bruised his feet with shackles. His neck was put in irons till what he foretold came to pass, till the word of the Lord proved him true. The king sent and released him. The rulers of people set him free. He made him master of his household, ruler over all he possessed, to instruct his princes as he pleased, and to teach his elders wisdom. Then Israel, that is Jacob, entered Egypt. Jacob lived as an alien in the land of Ham, the land of Goshen. The Lord made his people very fruitful. He made them too numerous for their foes, whose hearts he turned to hate his people, to conspire against his servants. And then starting in verse 26, you literally go into the book of Exodus. And so I just wanted to read that and now we can go to Genesis chapter 41. Because just wanted you to see, and go back and look at that later, because of all the things that it says that God did this. God conspired. God caused his people to hate his people. God sent a man before them. All that has to do with the providence of God. And that is really what the life of Joseph is about more than anybody else in all of the Bible. So we talked about before, Joseph really is Romans chapter 8 and verse 28 in living form. And I hope you see that. And we're going to kind of wrap up this morning talking about Joseph, really emphasizing that. We're going to do today just a little bit differently than what we've done. Is I'm going to just make a few comments and then skim over some points and then make some real important points that I think are that I want us to take away from the life of Joseph. So we won't be going a verse-by-verse type study as we have been doing, and we'll be going back and forth. So is everybody okay with that? Well, you got to be okay with that because that's what I'm going to do. So, yeah, right. And remember, when you get to be the teacher, what? That's right, you do it your way. Very good. You learn nothing else, you've learned that. That's a great lesson to learn. Let's look, and so we know chapter 41. Let's first of all talk about Joseph in Egypt or Joseph in Pharaoh. But I want to talk about Joseph's aging in Egypt because I think this is something maybe we The Bible tends to skim over periods of time, but for Joseph it is very important. In chapter 41 and verse 46, it says that Joseph was 30 years old when he entered the service of Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from Pharaoh's presence and traveled throughout Egypt. Joseph, the first time we hear about Joseph, it says he was a boy of 17. And we don't know, it seems that his dreams occurred when he was 17. And it, not long after that, he was sold into slavery. And so it appears that from the time he was, say, 17 or 18, he was in Egypt. A couple things about this we never think about. And I was looking at a little thing the other day about the history and the age of Isaac and those guys. Isaac was probably alive when Joseph disappeared. He did not die until later. And it appears, according to one guy, Joseph was probably gone for about 20 years or so. He possibly died right before they all moved to Egypt. So he missed his grandson for possibly about anywhere from 10 to 15 years. And if you go back and look and kind of add up all the numbers, it kind of plays out that way. So that not only affected Jacob, it affected his grandfather as well. So he's there and he comes to Pharaoh's service when he's 30. Now, something we don't figure out sometimes because of TV and movies and Kathy Stern lent me her version of Joseph in the Amazing Technicolor Dreamcoat, starring Donny Osmond, which, by the way, is very good. It's really, I really liked it, but it's not real close to the scriptures, but it's, you know, it's not bad. as good as that gets, okay? Just remember, yeah, there you go. But Joseph was not a young man when his brothers came to see him. Because he's 30 when he goes into the service of Pharaoh. The 7 years of plenty go by. That makes him 37. And then if you look in chapter 45 and verse 6, when he's talking to his brothers, he says, for 2 years now there has been a famine in the land. So he's 39 years old when his brothers come to see him. He's been gone for at least 22 years. 22 years his father has thought he was dead. And so you can see how that would impact a lot of things that Joseph does. And I think how it's best reflected is in the way Joseph treats his brothers. Now I've read different commentators and, you know, you see the movies and all that. And it's like, oh, Joseph is trying to teach them this wonderful lesson. It's why he is so mean to them. Joseph was mean to them because Joseph was being mean. Now, I know that's going to destroy some of you in your faith. Christy said, don't talk that way about Joseph. You know, but the truth is, he wasn't trying to teach them any lessons. He had had 22 years to fester on this thing. And he acted the way any normal person would react. Now, the good thing is, eventually, something happened, I think said by his brother Judah, that finally broke his heart about it, and he finally, you know, gave in to God. But I hope that'll give you hope that, not to be vengeful for 22 years. Some of you are thinking, oh, I've only been vengeful for 12 years. I got 10 more years to go. But to realize that, you know, if you are a person who has a hard time forgiving or a hard time getting over things, Joseph had the same problem. You can relate to him. You know, you need to kind of immerse yourself in his life if you're that type of person. Some of us, we get over stuff a lot faster. Some of us don't. So immerse yourself into his life if you have a hard time with that. Because he's a great example that you can get over that. So for 22 years, he's not seen his father. And I thought that was very important. Another thing important about him and Pharaoh, or about him being in Egypt before his brothers come, if you look in chapter 41 and verse 45, and I thought this was very ironic. Pharaoh said to Joseph, I am Pharaoh, but without your word, no one will lift hand or foot in all Egypt. That's pretty cool. Pharaoh gave Joseph the name Zaphnath-Paneah, and gave him Anasath, daughter of Potipharah, priest of On, to be his wife, and Joseph went throughout the land of Egypt. Joseph's Egyptian name can mean one of three things, and I thought this was kind of ironic. It can mean revealer of secrets, which he was. It can mean savior of the land, which he was. And it can also mean a wise man fleeing from adultery, which he was. Isn't that it? I just thought that was interesting. That his name can mean any of those three things in the Egyptian language and what's come to us from hieroglyphics. So he could be called either revealer of secrets, savior of the land, or a wise man who flees from pollution, flees from adultery. So we all know the story that Pharaoh has this dream. And the great thing about the Egyptians was that they did everything in hieroglyphics and in pictures. They had lots of pictures that they were big on that. And so this is a picture that's been discovered of Egyptians with their cattle. And these are what the cattle looked like. They kind of look closer to the longhorn cattle of Texas than they do the Jersey cows of South Georgia. That's what they look more like than what we do. And so I just thought I'd throw that up there too. That's a cow. I like pictures of cows. Do y'all like pictures of cows? You don't know. Can y'all see that? Oh, dim the house lights a little bit. I want everybody to see this. There you go. No, a little bit more. Yeah, well, here. I'm sorry. My bad. Isn't that good? Okay, you can bring it back up. I just thought that was a great picture of a cow. So the seven cows, the seven scrawny cows eat the seven fat cows. And then they also had lots of pictures of wheat back then. And so then this is a picture they had of Egyptians carrying wheat. This also was a picture that they drew that we've discovered. And here's what their wheat looked like. And you can see it's pretty full and beautiful. And Egyptian wheat, by the way, is still kind of a very prominent wheat. Pretty much if you go Google images of Egyptian wheat, that is what they had back then. It's pretty much the same. It hasn't changed over all the centuries. And it's very beautiful. But he has this dream where these seven stalks of corn or wheat, it's what they are basically, sheaves of corn, come up and eat the other ones. And those are the things of famine. And as a result of that, we all know how that Joseph, he interprets the dreams and Pharaoh says, what should we do? And Joseph says, I love this. He says, we need to find a man who is wise and discerning. he knows who Pharaoh's going to pick. Yeah, so he's kind of nudging, what do you think about that, Pharaoh? And Pharaoh goes, well, why don't we just pick you? And Joseph goes, really, me? I never thought of that. And again, that's how it happened. I don't want to distort anybody's view. That's what happened. And so he says, we'll pick you. And so he makes him ruler of all of Egypt, only second to him. And Joseph goes through the land, and he has somebody carrying him in a chariot and a guy going before him, and he says, bow to him. And so everything that Joseph had dreamed has come true. Not only that, his brothers bow to him, his father will eventually bow to him, but the sun and the moon and the stars, the entire world, metaphorically, bows down to Joseph. Okay? Just as he dreamed it would happen. And so his brothers then come to Egypt because of the famine in the land. And I want to look at some conversations. I just titled the second part because I'm assuming we kind of know the whole story. We don't need to go over item by item. About Joseph and his family, because there's some great conversations that happen between Joseph and his family. And the first one is found in chapter 44. Looking at verse 20. This is the second time they come back. First time they come down, Joseph accuses them of being spies. Says, I'm going to take one of you captive, go home and bring your other brother back. They go back up to get Benjamin. Jacob says, no, don't send him, it'll kill me. And so the famine continues, and one of the brothers says, we could have been back twice by now if you will let us go back. And he says, well, take Benjamin with you. He says, and if I die, if I live in misery, then I live in misery. And so he takes him back with him, and they come back to Joseph. Joseph once more tricks them. He puts a silver chalice into one of their bags, and they leave. And so he sends a steward after them and says, hey, you stole something from the king. And they said, no, we didn't. And they pull out the silver chalice, and whose bag is it in? It's in Benjamin's bag. And so they all load up and go back down to Egypt again, go back in again, and they come for him. And Joseph has just been playing with them. He's been manipulating them in. He's been punishing them. He's been making them miserable. He was not trying to do this because he was a good guy and he was trying to help them. He was trying to get back at them. But notice what happens. Verse 18. Then Judah went up to him and said, please, my lord, let your servant speak a word to my lord. Do not be angry with your servant, though you are equal to Pharaoh himself. My lord asked his servants, do you have a father or a brother? And we answered, we have an aged father. And there is a young son born to him in his old age. His brother is dead. Let's stop right there. Up until this point, they had never said that. All they had ever said, and you can write these down, go look at them later. In chapter 42, verses 13 and 32, all they ever said is, he is no more. Which is a very innocuous phrase. It was like they didn't want to admit what had happened. They just want to say, he's no more of that. He might have been over here, or he might have gotten lost, or he may have been, you know, snuck off and deserted the family. He's just no more. Judah finally says, he's dead. And he is the only one of his mother's sons left, that is Benjamin, and his father loves him. Then you said to your servants, bring him down to me so I can see him for myself. And we said to my lord, the boy cannot leave his father. If he leaves him, his father will die. But you told your servants, unless your youngest brother comes down with you, you will not see my face again. When we went back to your servant, my father said, and told my father, we told him what my lord had said. Then our father said, go back and buy a little more food. But we said, we cannot go down. Only if our youngest brother is with us will we go. We cannot see the man's face unless our youngest brother is with us. Your servant, my father, said to us, you know that my wife bore me two sons. One of them went away from me, and I said, he has surely been torn to pieces. And I have not seen him since, 22 years later. If you take this one from me too, and harm comes to him, you will bring my gray head down to the grave in misery. So now, if the boy is not with us when I go back to your servant, my father, notice he has taken responsibility if I go back. And if my father, whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life. Stop right there. Remember, that's what Joseph's situation was. And they hated Joseph for it. Now Judah realizes that that's important to Jacob. They're not jealous of it anymore. In fact, now Judah is using it to try and get Joseph to understand. I love that. And if my whose life is closely bound up with the boy's life, and sees that the boy isn't there, he will die. Your servants will bring the gray head of our father down to our grave in sorrow. Your servant guaranteed the boy's safety, my father. I said, if I do not bring him back to you, I will here bear the blame before you, my father, all my life. Now then, please let your servant remain here as my lord's slave. That is, let me. I am willing to become the slave. Remember who Judah was? He's the one who said, let's sell him into slavery. And let the boy return with his brothers. How can I go back to my father if the boy's with me? No, do not let me see the misery that would come upon my father. When he saw the misery that come upon his father with Joseph, he said they tried to comfort him, but they basically blew it off. They let Jacob be miserable for 20-something years. And now Judah says, I cannot bear to see my father miserable. And I think this is significant because it's a real turning point in Judah's life. Now he says, I'll be the slave. Now he says, let the boy go back because he's closely bound up with my father. Now he says, I don't want to see my daddy's misery. And then it says, don't just forget the whole chapter break. Then Joseph could no longer control himself before his all attendants, and he cried out. And he said to his brothers in verse 3, I am Joseph. Is my father still living? But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence. Then he said to his brothers, come close to me. And when they had done so, he said, I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. See, I think we need to see a couple things from this. I really do. I think, first of all, I hope you get a more clear picture of what Joseph was really like. But I hope you need to see also that there's hope for everyone, no matter how bad you have been. Judah had been a bad guy. He had been a terrible brother. He had done some awful things. But he was finally broken. And his brokenness enabled his brother to be broken as well. And so I wanted to share that story with you because I wanted to give you hope. That no matter what you've done, no matter what you've been into, there's always hope that God will provide a way of escape for you. We just have to trust God. We have to realize that God can fix any issue. If you're a person who's had lots of bad relationships with your family, let me talk to you just for a second. God can fix that. If you're at odds with your brothers or sisters or your parents or your children, God can fix that. Now, hopefully he won't take 22 years. But God can fix any family problem. If we are just willing to be broken, if we are willing to see our problem in it and fix and get ourselves fixed, it will fix a lot of problems. Now, obviously, some problems can't be fixed. But there's just not too many situations this side of death that God can't fix, if people are willing. So that's just a story I want to tell you that one. Another story I want to tell you. Skip over to chapter 46. I want to read a couple of verses real fast, because I think the tender moments between Joseph and Jacob are amazing. And if you're not touched by this, you do not have a heart. Your heart is not beating any longer. Look in chapter 46, verses 28 through 30. Every time I read these, I just get so moved. So now the boys, you know, Pharaoh said, oh, your brother here. Great. Joseph tells him, he says, your brothers are here. He says, look, he says, go back to Canaan, get your daddy. He said, take these carts with you. Tell them to leave their possessions in Canaan, because you're going to come here and get all new stuff. Which is kind of a sweet deal if you think about it. And so they go back and tell him that. And Jacob decides to go to Egypt. And Joseph goes to meet him. Now Jacob, verse 28, I love this. Now Jacob sent Judah ahead of him. See that? Judah's now taking this very prominent role in the family. Not Reuben, who's the oldest, but Judah. Now Jacob sent Judah ahead of him to get directions to Goshen. That's all a good deal. They didn't have GPS back then. When they arrived in the region of Goshen, Joseph had his chariot made ready and went to Goshen to meet his father Israel. And as soon as Joseph appeared before him, he threw his arms around his father and wept for a long time. And Israel said to Joseph, now I am ready to die, since I have seen for myself that you are still alive. Isn't that a cool thing? Now I am ready to die, that I've seen you again. And if you go over to chapter 48 and verse 11, when Joseph brings his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to get Jacob's blessing. Jacob's getting ready to bless him, but he says to Joseph, I never expected to see your face again. And now, God has allowed me to see your children too. And can't you just feel the raw emotion coming out of that? I never expected to see your face again. And now I get to see my grandchildren as well. And I thought those two stories about the relationship with Judah and Jacob, those tender moments, kind of really, this is just like a, what do you say? It's just like a perfect story, isn't it? It's like a perfect ending to a very difficult story. And we're going to come back to that concept in just a moment. So here's Joseph getting right on the chariot. And here's him meeting his brothers. And that's kind of a picture from a movie, I think. And I want you to want to talk about a third thing here. Two more things and we're done. And I want you to write these verses down, so I'm going to leave them up here. One thing about Joseph, that even though he was kind of a little pesky teenage brother, and even though he struggled with vengeance, and sometimes it overcame him, and eventually he overcame it. There's one thing that he got doing after he got thrown in prison, is that he started talking about God a lot more. And it's funny, prison can do that to you. When you're at the bottom, when you hit rock bottom spiritually, sometimes we have to do that to start talking about God. I heard somebody say one time, the most people learn start talking about God when they are flat on their back. That's the only time they ever look up at God. And sometimes God will put you flat on your back to make you think about it. So that's why he does it. Almost all the time, I'm convinced. In fact, all the time. He puts us on our backs to make us look up at him. But Joseph had kind of reached, when he hit prison, remember, I know it was a white-collar prison, but it was still prison. He was in shackles, it says. In chapter 41, verses 16, 25, 28, and through 32, you can write those four verses down. He tells Pharaoh, God will give Pharaoh the answer he desires. God has revealed to Pharaoh. God has shown Pharaoh, not Joseph, not me, but God. Verse 32, the matter has been firmly decided by God, and God will do it soon. All those verses he's telling Pharaoh, God has caused this to happen. The dreams, the cattle, the corn, all that stuff, he said, God is going to cause it to happen, and God's going to do it soon. Chapter 41, verses 51 and 52, he names his children. And this is what he names his children. Manasseh, it is because it means forgetful, because God has made me forget my trouble. Ephraim is fruitful, because God has made me fruitful. And so that's what he named his boys. He named them forgetful and fruitful. Kind of like seven dwarfs. Snoopy. He's not a dwarf. Dopey and Sleepy. Yeah, there you go. Those are my two favorite ones. There might be some connection there. But he named them fruitful and forgetful. And that God's caused me to forget my troubles. That was a good thing. God's caused me fruitful in the land. Chapter 45, verses 5 through 9, this is when he comforts his brothers. And he says, it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you. It was not you who sent me here, but God. God has made me Lord of all Egypt. And so those are the things he's telling his brothers. He said, don't worry about what happened. He said, because God did all this. God sent me here ahead of you. Because they were worried about that. Later on, after Jacob dies, we'll come back to that. He says, God did this. Don't worry about it. And this is for free. Where you are today, we're living in Atlanta, Georgia, on September the 12th, 2010. That's right. God brought you here. You're not here this morning by accident. Your life is not where it is by accident. God brought you here. He sent you here. He has placed you here for a reason. And sometimes we get thinking, well, why am I at where I'm at and all these things going on? It's because God has sent you here for a reason. You know, I've been struggling with something for 3 or 4 days now and could not figure it out to save my life. And got was stubborn, hard-hearted, didn't want to get it. You said, oh, you couldn't be that way. Ask Christy what she's been through for the last 3 days, and she'll tell you the whole story. But in this morning, I was reading my Bible, and all of a sudden it hit me. This is why it's happened. Now, have I enjoyed the last? No. To learn what I've learned, it was worth it. And I'm glad it happened now. But God has sent you here for a reason. Chapter 48 and verse 9, he's telling his daddy, he said, these are the sons God has given me. And then chapter 50, verses 19 through 25, his last conversation with his brothers, he said, don't be afraid, am I in the place of God? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. But God will surely come to your aid. God will surely come to your aid after he had died. And this is when he and his brothers, and the brothers there might mean the grandsons of his, or the sons of his brothers. It may not mean all of them were still living. But it means that God was surely going to come to their aid when they were in slavery 400 something years later. So Joseph became a man who didn't trust, who no longer just trusted in his dreams and in his personal accomplishments. He became a man who totally, completely trusted in God. Again, that should give you hope. Now, you don't have time to write these down, but I want you to listen. I got thinking about this whole thing about the providence of God in Joseph's life. And I did this little what if. I want you to listen to this. What if Joseph had not had the dreams as a precocious teenager in the first place? What if he never had those dreams? What would have happened? What if Reuben's escape plan had worked? Remember Reuben? He said, throw him in the pit and I'll come get him out later. And he was gone. And they sold him. And he came back and says, what happened to him? He says, we sold him. What if he had got back to the cistern in time to help him escape? What if Joseph had talked the brothers into killing Joseph? Judah had talked the brothers into killing Joseph rather than selling him. 20 shekels is all we're getting? Cut his throat. What if the Ishmaelite traders were on their way home rather than on their way to Egypt? What if they had been on their way home from Egypt rather than on their way to Egypt? What if Joseph had not been sold to Potiphar, the captain of Pharaoh's guard? What if someone else had paid a better price for him? What if Potiphar's wife had been successful? What if Joseph had not been put into Pharaoh's prison, but Potiphar had believed his wife and had executed him instead? What if Joseph had not been put into Pharaoh's prison, but had been put into a prison for the common people? He was a slave. How did he end up in Pharaoh's prison? What if Pharaoh had not been disgruntled with the cupbearer and the baker? What if the guy's baking had been fine that day? What if the cupbearer had done a good job tasting the wine that day? What if Pharaoh had those two executed rather than put them into prison? What if Joseph had not been assigned to be their attendant, but Potiphar had assigned somebody else? What if they had not had any dreams that night? What if there had not been a 2-year wait before Pharaoh had his dreams? What if Joseph gotten out immediately and Pharaoh had the dreams 2 years later and there'd been nobody there to interpret the dreams? What if the chief cupbearer had forgotten about Pharaoh again when it happened to, had forgotten about Joseph again when the dreams happened to Pharaoh? What if he'd forgotten? And I like this one. What if Jacob had decided he didn't want to send his sons to Egypt, but he wanted to send his servants instead? Now, that is pretty revealing to me about the hand of God in all this. Say, it all worked out, although sometimes it looked really, really good, and sometimes it looked really, really bad. It all happened according to God's providence. And one of the greatest stories in all of human history became true. Now, knowing all that, everybody with me? Knowing all that, I want to read you this song again. And I want you to think about it like that. William Cooper's wife died. And after he had grieved for her, he got in a carriage, had his carriage driver. He wanted to go by the Thames River. And he was going to throw himself into the river and commit suicide. And there was a fog that night as he was in the carriage. And the driver drove him around for a couple hours. And finally the driver, he said, "I think we've reached the place." And he thought it was the river. And when William Cooper got out of the carriage and the fog lifted, he was standing at his own front door. And he went in and wrote the following words. God moves in a mysterious way, His wonders to perform. He plants His footsteps in the sea and rides upon the storm. Deep in unfathomable minds of never failing skill, He treasures up His bright designs and works His sovereign will. You fearful saints, fresh courage take. The clouds you so much dread are big with mercy and shall break in blessings on your head. Judge not the Lord by feeble sense, but trust Him for His grace. Behind a frowning providence, He hides a smiling face. His purposes will ripen fast, unfolding every hour. The bud may have a bitter taste, but sweet will be the flower. Blind unbelief is sure to err and scan His work in vain. God is His own interpreter, and He will make it plain. God bless you all. Thanks for coming to class. Let's go get our children and let's have a great period of worship.